Hello and welcome to What the Tech from Boost AI, where we talk with some of the brilliant minds behind new and exciting tech initiatives to learn what it takes to tackle technological uncertainty and eventually change the world. Today, I am thrilled to welcome to the show self-proclaimed serial entrepreneur and tech star Roy Pereira. Roy is currently the CEO of Unified, the integrations as a service platform for B2B SaaS companies. With their Unified APIs, developers can integrate just once to add multiple software systems to their products from categories like HR, ATS, CRM, and authentication. Their solution has transformed what used to take several months into an afternoon project, helping SaaS companies swiftly and securely scale their integrations. Should go without saying, but those time savings and value adds can be a game changer for emergent SaaS products as they look to make their mark, achieve new market potential, and drive more revenue. But along with steering the innovation over at Unified, Roy has been a positive presence in the Toronto and broader Canadian tech scene for a while now, with more than a decade of pushing the envelope in the advertising, security, networking, and of course, software industries. I am thrilled to hear what's in store for Unified, how Roy got into the startup space in the first place, and his take on the current state of the tech ecosystem. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Roy.
Hey, thanks, Paul. That was a great intro.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. I know I gave some background on who Roy is, but I'd love to hear from you firsthand. How did you get into the tech scene in the first place, and what gets you going to do your job at Unified?
Yeah, you know, I was a math geek in school, both high school and university, and I always wanted to be in computers. I was amazed that they could do stuff, even early on, you know, how they could ask for your input and then spit it back out. And I'm like, that freaked me out when I first saw it and I was really young. You know, obviously that's pretty funny now. And I just wanted to be part of it. I wanted to understand how these machines made stuff out of nothing. And that's what got me into it. And honestly, I don't think I can do anything else. I'm not really good at a lot of other things. I can't even change the oil in my car. I don't really know how to.
Well, EVs will solve that problem for you going forward, Roy. But it's so funny. I'm the complete opposite. I was not a math geek. And I actually am very surprised I found myself into the tech space in even a marketing capacity, just because I thought so much of this would be over my head. But when you're talking about innovation too, and just like really, really driving some unique products and services, you get excited about it. So you don't even necessarily have to have a deep mathematical background to become a serial entrepreneur or just an innovator in the tech scene to begin with. But it's good grounding to have, I think. I'd love to know too, beyond the math geek of it all, what were your other passions that drove you to become a founder in the first place and to join the startup ecosystem that we're in right now?
Yeah, what you actually said is actually kind of interesting, because it's not just about being a math geek. You don't have to be one. You just really have to want to help people, I think, right? I like to say that, you know, I get up in the morning because I want to change the world. Obviously, I'm not solving world hunger. I don't know how to do that. World peace, definitely don't know how to do that. I do know how to do some enterprise software, some, you know, in this case, you know, very technical infrastructure solutions for SaaS companies. And so that's what I want to do. And every day that I work with my customers and I see their faces light up, I can make their day easier. I think that's what gets me up in the morning, honestly. So I like to please people. I like to please my customers. I get a thrill that they actually pay us. You know, again, I still remember my first startup where I got my first payment, my check, physical check. And I was like, that blew my mind. And I caught the entrepreneurial bug because of that.
I love that. So on that note, you mentioned your first startup. Before we dive into Unified, could you tell me about some of the other projects that you've worked on in the startup space to date, whether those are companies you founded or even just teams you've worked with to help bring their solutions to market or give lift to their ideas?
You know, the one question that I typically get, because I've started about four or five companies. And so the one question is like, how do you start these? Like, where do you get the ideas? And it's always typically the same thing. It's always like, what do I need that I'm not finding? And in some ways I'm a builder. I like to build. I'm a problem solver. And because I can build technically, I will try and fix my own problems. That doesn't always work in life, but in technology, it works. And so I'm always building a company or a product or a solution that I need. And so I'm typically customer zero. This is true for Unified, because when you look at all of my previous companies, I've always needed something like Unified, always. And I just think that it's time to actually come up with something like this to give to other companies that have the exact same issue. And all companies today in this interconnected world have this need for API integrations. But before, you know, the last company was a scheduling company. I needed an executive admin to schedule all of my meetings. I had so many meetings. I was spending half of my day managing, you know, setting up and then changing. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to build my own AI to do this. This was 9 years ago before we had real AI today. But, you know, that's how Zoom.ai or later rebranded to Calendar Hero. That's how we started. And the company before that, I needed a good way to sell advertising online instead of using humans, because their humans are expensive. And so we automated the buying and selling of premium online advertising, created basically an e-commerce platform for ads way before Shopify or anything else was around. And so it was always this need. It's always this need that I don't really want to do that, because maybe I'm not just lazy, lazy kind of a negative connotation, but why am I going to waste my time, my human time, doing that? Computers can do it. So that's typically where a lot of my inspiration comes from.
I love that. And I feel like it should be an obvious point, but really isn't to a lot of folks, that you got to start from the need and you got to start from the solution and the problem that you're actually looking to solve, and not just make tech for tech's sake. I think that is a chronic, not problem per se, but like if you just think a shiny new tech innovation that you've driven is going to move the needle, if you don't already have like a customer in your mind lined up, it doesn't have to be a material customer, a real person in the real world, but someone who's going to actually use it, why are you doing this? You need to actually get to the heart of the problem. Yeah.
Let me pitch you on my new Bitcoin, blockchain, AI, whatever, whatever, right? Exactly. Everyone can do that. I think the one thing to also mention about, hey, I have this problem, I'm going to go and build a company around it, that's a great thing. So you're passionate about it, you understand it. Two great things. The issue there is, make sure other people have the same problem. Make sure lots of people have similar problems, you know, and not like the same problem that one specific implementation will fix, but like the general problem domain is big enough, it's growing, you know, and so maybe, you know, your first application to solve it is great, but like throw that out maybe and build a new one. But the problem will still be there, right? And so I think that's the one thing that I always look at. You know, how many times do you wake up in the morning and go, man, I wish there was something to fix this problem that I'm having. And then like, oh, I'm the only one that has this. Okay, maybe I'll just get over it. So you have to do that research and go and talk to other people and make sure that they actually want to spend money on it. So i.e., it's a value to them, like not just an inconvenience. So that I think takes a little bit of time. And I typically spend quite a lot of time thinking about it and talking to people about, hey, do you have this problem as well? And how much would you spend on it? Like how important is this problem?
It's
kind of a weird conversation over beers or coffee sometimes, but it's part of my subtle research when something's in my head and I'm thinking about doing something next.
I love that though. I mean, you're going to get a real organic answer if you're doing it in a casual setting on the one hand. I also love how you were talking about just asking yourself this question about, do other people have this problem? I feel like I face that every day working full-time remote on a marketing team that's very small here at Boast, and just being like, okay, well, who is going to drive this solution for me? Oh no, this is just a Paul work from home problem, not something that would spark innovation or a tech enabled solution necessarily. So I did also want to pull back on, you had mentioned real AI and how today we have real AI versus, I think you had said 9 years ago, in name, AI was starting to come up, but it wasn't necessarily the generative AI that we're working with today. And similarly, earlier, when you're talking about just computers being eye-opening as a kid, wow, this machine can do things that I never thought that I'd be able to just type in and get an outcome for. Could we talk a little bit about AI today? What the implications are, I think, for the startup scene?
It's I think AI is hot. It's always been hot. It goes through cycles. Yeah. I wrote an article on LinkedIn about those cycles, about me going through two of those cycles. There's been others for sure. You know, real AI is interesting because real is sort of like a zero or one. You know, it's not. It's just better. That's the better word, better. The AI today is much, much better. Magnitudes better than it was 9 years ago when I started my last company. I would describe 9 years ago as AI was a domain that you would go and buy for $50, right? .AI. That's what the companies were back then. They were, most of them were frankly bullshit. That was the only AI that they had, was their domain name. You know, the technology has, in terms of understanding the large language model, the LLMs are really a massive innovation. I really personally didn't even foresee how good they would be and how good they have been today already. And that, you know, in terms of getting better, it's really getting to the point where you have not just OpenAI or like some of these models from Facebook and Google, but, you know, public domain models on Hugging Face, just done by some kid, they're just as good. And really, we're getting to the point where it's the data that, you know, they're used to, that's being used to train those. That's the key differentiator, right? And who has the data is going to win. And so I didn't really foresee that. Back then, you know, we had neural networks that's been around for a while, reinforcement learning. Both of those two are actually Canadian. One from Jeffrey Hinton here in the University of Toronto, neural networks, the guy stuck with neural networks when everybody said they were too hard kind of thing. And all of a sudden now, you know, an iPhone could do it easily. And of course, reinforcement learning out of actually Alberta, University of Edmonton. And that's a really interesting concept in terms of like how kids learn. They don't know anything. They just learn based off of rewards. I want to walk because I want to get my rattle. So how do I figure out how to walk? It's miraculous looking at a computer do that, because they can do it in a billion times in a minute or so, right? Maybe not a minute, an hour. And so I think it's just going to get better. I think I mentioned those two things because right now everyone's talking about LLMs, awesome. Both from an understanding point of view, but also a generative point of view, which is sort of the same thing. It's languages. I think that's just one component. And I think that's why I'm really excited overall. There's so many other AI technologies like these neural networks and other learning models that when you combine them all together, like you get something that's really powerful and useful. That's the main difference between 9 years ago and today. We're actually in a moment of useful AI. Before, it was sort of hokey. What's the right word? Hokey is not a good word.
Novel.
A little BS. I mean, there's still a lot of BS in AI for sure, but it's mostly useful.
I'd love to bring it now to Unified and what you're doing there. We had touched on it earlier. It was something that solves an acute need and a need that people want to pay for. API integrations as a service could be a game changer for companies that are spending weeks on projects that they really shouldn't be, and that might be actually getting them disillusioned in entering the SaaS space to begin with. Could you talk to me a little bit about the genesis of Unified? I know that we have touched on some of these points, but what the original goals were and just how things have evolved since you've launched.
I definitely correct you on the weeks. It's not weeks, it's years.
Years.
We have a customer case study. We have two of them. One of them, you know, we saved them about a year and a half. The other one that's coming up, we saved them 6 years in terms of development time and obviously all the costs associated with that. Let me back up to the cloud. Let's go all the way back, 2000, whatever. I don't know what exact year that was. We got this cloud thing, right? Salesforce is like, ditch your software on your server, come to the cloud, you know, whatever. No installs. And that obviously ushered in this era that we all are in today. Like, most of the people that I interact with on a daily basis don't remember installing a server in a closet, right? You don't need to do that. And so what that allows you to do is create new apps really quickly because it's all in the cloud. You just host them in there, don't care. And so we've gotten to this point where there's so many apps out there. The end user has been increasing the number of apps that they have, right? And we've seen this number. You can find the stats on this. And now it's up to like 60 different apps, right? So we log in, and this is why, you know, federated sign-in identity is really popular, Google, you know, all of that. Every time that I'm using a different app, I leave some data of mine there, right? And what you find also is that there's these large islands, sources of truth, where you store your important data. So if you're in sales, you're storing your important data in a CRM. If you're in HR, you're storing them in an HRIS, right? So your employee data. But then when you go to another app, let's say you bring up a payroll application, you know, you're going to log in, they're not going to have access to your employee data. And so the first thing they're going to ask you is, who are your employees so I can pay them? It's a good question. And typically what we found was that interconnectedness wasn't there. And so you'd had these manual processes, like I'm going to upload a CSV file or I'm going to retype everything. That just doesn't work in today's interconnected world. And so we've always had this issue with all the companies that we've built. And we've always built these integrations, these API integrations. And an API is just basically a computer talking to a computer. Yep. That's really all it is. It's sort of like languages. And what I would mention about that language is that it's not one language. It's a bunch of different dialects, accents, and it's all like loosely centered around some open standards, but everybody sort of speaks this differently. So there's no open standards that facilitate that open communication between these servers. So I just can't go into my payroll software and say, my employees are over here, you go, you know, go fetch it. And so that's what we're doing. We're building that universal translator, if you will, if you're a Star Trek fan, where we're translating and connecting the relevant APIs. And so our technology powers these integrations at B2B SaaS companies. You know, the end user never sees our name, but we are part of the infrastructure for these SaaS companies. And so that's what is really exciting to me, because we've always had this problem. And we sort of built over time, over many companies, a really good way of solving it. And when we decided to dedicate a whole company just to this, man, we went so deep. And we came up with something completely different, completely modern, really next gen. And I think the other thing that I would say too is, honestly, I didn't anticipate this, but talking about AI, AI feeds off of data. Without data, AI is dumb. And I actually mentioned this before, right? It's about the training data, right? And so when you're taking AI and you're feeding it your customers' data, you produce magic back. And this is what so many companies are doing today. And it's not just established companies, it's new companies, new entrants. And in fact, when you take a look at the number of SaaS companies out there in the world, it's grown. And there's some sectors like recruiting, for example. Recruiting tech is 13,000 out of 30,000 total SaaS companies. It's like 13,000. That's a massive percentage. And it's growing. And it's all over the world as well. So most of that growth in the last 18 months is because of AI. AI-enabled apps and their hunger for access to customer data.
That is eye-opening in many ways, but it also reflects a lot of what we've seen. I mean, you don't have to be on the floor at like your Collision conferences to see how many banners just have AI on them now, especially in that startup section. And I'm like, I saw that years ago, to your point, when it was as simple as buying a domain and adding that to your business, and you're an AI company. But over the past couple of years, again, even just going to shows, seeing the community, it is big and it's at that early stage level. A lot of people are jumping in right now, but to your point, it's useful now. It isn't just a name.
And it's accessible. There's so many APIs you can just tap into and gain access to the top LLMs. But the limitation is the data.
Yeah.
Right. And so what we're finding, about 3/4 of our customers are AI enabled B2B SaaS applications. And they realize that they need access to consistent real-time customer data to push through their AIs. It's not their own, someone else's AIs typically, but then to do that job that they're doing, right?
Yeah. And I love, again, that you, I'll call back to the Trekkies in the room, that universal translator. You're making it so that the data is parsable. The AI algorithms can actually connect the dots and not have to speak the different dialects on their own. They're learning because and they have you.
We're adding meaning to all of these APIs. Yeah. We're adding semantics. We're adding this common language. And that allows us to add new integrations like super fast. We can add them in an hour. And just back to that like case study, it typically takes 2-3 months just to build one. And so now customers come in, they have access to 140 plus. And then if they ask us to build another one, we can build it. We can build it in an hour just because of the next gen architecture that we've built up. So I think it's super important. I think it's this, it is the connectivity that we all need in the future. We have this internet, awesome. It's all connected. I could, but that's on a human level. The computers and about 80% of internet traffic is actually server to server communication. The computers really need to get this common language so that we can move data around.
Absolutely. Yeah. I worked in the network performance monitoring space a few years back, and it wasn't even on a scale of what it is today in terms of that traffic that you're talking about. And the problem was prescient back then too, but I will not digress in that direction. One thing I did want to bring back up though, was that you had mentioned that before you decided to go full bore into building Unified, it was almost iterative in that the problem kept on presenting itself about API integrations, but it was over the course of working at multiple different projects, if not multiple different companies. Could you tell me a little bit about just kind of the community that you've worked with to build all of these startups in the past, just to even get ideas off the ground, whether the customers that you work with for Unified or even just like an incubator accelerator community? I know you're pretty active with Techstars. So anything on that?
I think that's a really good question because you can't do this by yourself. I think, we joke that, now with AI, who needs employees kind of thing, I don't think that that's true just yet. I do think we're going to have a lot smaller companies with a lot less capital needs to build good companies, but that's a different topic. I think the community is so important. I'm in Toronto. It's a very robust, large tech community. It keeps growing. There's new people coming in. We have a lot of people from outside Canada who move in, who are in the tech ecosystem. So it's constantly evolving. It's amazing. But there's a lot of other communities out there and really online communities all over the place. So you don't even have to be physically in one spot. And I think that's super important because yes, you have this idea. Yes, you have a problem. Everyone also has ideas and problems and they're probably very similar. And getting people to ask questions like, how did you start? Or did you ever encounter this issue and how did you overcome it? Everyone's been here before. It's not new. You can probably go back to the Egyptians. They were probably having the same sort of gripes. They weren't talking about iPhones, but they were probably talking about a lot of the same things, politics and whatever.
Oh, yeah. We've only got one Rosetta Stone. Who's going to do all this translating? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think leveraging that is super important. It's a lot easier now with online communities. But even in a place like Toronto, there's constantly these physical meetups. I know we went through the lockdowns of 3 years where we didn't have that. Now they're back. And it's not just Toronto, all over Canada, all over the world, right? Absolutely. Not just Silicon Valley. And that's, I think, the one thing that's really changed since the lockdowns, the physical requirements of being in these hot spots, even Toronto. Like, don't need to be in Toronto. You want to move to Barrie or you want to move to Halifax? Go ahead. There's a lot of people there and you can still maintain your relationships with people in Toronto. And so I don't think that that's really needed. Yeah, but it is nice to go out and have a pizza and beer with other like-minded people.
Sometimes. Oh, absolutely. I really love that you brought up this point about too, just kind of the remote world that we're living in. A few episodes back, I wasn't expecting it, but I was talking to our friend Lloyd from D3 in Montreal, and he brought Mina from Fresher Technologies on. I had no idea that someone in Montreal was able to use the Greentown Labs down the street from me here in Boston. So he was part of a local incubator and local accelerator community here in Massachusetts, where I'm based. And I met him at Toronto when I was up there, I believe, for Elevate. Then we hopped on a call while he was in Montreal. He's working with our partners in Halifax on some projects, but he's leveraging the brain trust here in my backyard all of these together to get his product off the ground, to enhance his MVP too. It was a great conversation about just how he learned so much from going to all these different places and also just having access to those communities online. And it's fantastic. And here at Boast, we really exemplify that too. Like I said, I'm in Boston. I'm kind of the outlier here on the Boast team. I'm in the States. We do have folks all across the US, but people think Boast, they think Vancouver, they think Toronto, I think a lot of the time, but we have connections with those innovators in all the communities where we see these innovations happening. And to your point, they're not just in one spot. We're getting so excited about the work that we're able to do with folks up in Calgary, up in Alberta, up in Edmonton, and then even down here in the States too. I love that I can talk about this innovation with folks in Boston, and also that we're going to be doing more of a roadshow to actually meet people on their terms outside of Silicon Valley. Something that comes up a lot on this show, outside of the Silicon Valley of it all, we all get shark tanked. We all think that there's only one way to get your product off the ground, that you have to go the equity route necessarily. We won't go down that path because I know we're mostly at time, but I would love to know any sage advice or words of wisdom for folks entering the startup ecosystem today or looking to bring their ideas to market.
Yeah, so the funding environment in the last 2 years has fundamentally changed. It's as worse, if not worse, than 2008. It's just as bad as 2000. Those are the last two times that we've seen a dip, a massive dip, cliff, actually. It's getting better, but it's slowly getting better. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be flushed out of the system before this thing works again. And so my advice is hustle, get traction. Don't think about getting that raise. Doesn't matter your background. Doesn't matter what you've done in the past. Funding is very difficult to get. Be creative. But really focus on your customers. Go and close them, right? Go and collect money. Get them on a subscription or whatever, however you collect. That is the number one thing. And be lean. I think, the remote working aspect, because we're all mostly remote, right? So you can hire outside. You don't have to hire someone in downtown Manhattan and pay them $500,000. But also the AI. Right. So less than 12 months ago, ChatGPT really hit the scene. That has massively changed how many resources in terms of people and money that a company needs. And so there is no reason why you can't get the traction, meaningful traction. And you shouldn't have to wait. You shouldn't wait for funding because it's not there. It's waiting for you much later on.
Absolutely.
So it's both a negative, but also a positive. So the two things happen at the same time, the funding cliff, but also AI and remote work. So those two things help you get to that traction.
Thank you so much for those wonderful parting words.
All right. Bye-bye.